104. Strength. A shirt marn, the heart of the revel, is the final of the three great, mindless unmade. His gift to men is not prophecy or battle focus, but a lust for indulgence. Indeed, the great debauchery recorded from the court of Bayala in 480, which led to dynastic collapse, might be attributable to the influence of a shirt marn. From Hesse's Mythica, page 203. Navani Colin had some practice holding a kingdom together. During Gavilar's last days, he had gone strange. Few knew how dark he'd grown, but they had seen the eccentricity. Jasnah had written about that, of course. Jasnah somehow found time to write about everything, from her father's biography to gender relations, to the importance of Chul breeding cycles on the southern slopes of the Horneater Peaks. Navani strode through the hallways of Urethiru, joined by a nice burly group of Bridge Four Windrunners. As Gavilar had grown more and more distracted, Navani herself had worked to keep squabbling Light Eyes from sundering the kingdom. But that had been a different kind of danger from the one she faced today. Today, her work had implications not only for one nation, but for the entire world. She burst into a room deep within the tower, and the four Light Eyes seated there scrambled to their feet, all but Sabariel, who appeared to be flipping through a stack of cards bearing pictures of women in compromising positions. Navani sighed, then nodded as Aladar gave her a respectful bow, light glinting off his bald head. Not for the first time, Navani wondered if his thin mustache and the tuft of beard on his bottom lip were compensation for his lack of hair. Hatham was there as well, refined, with rounded features and green eyes. As usual, his fashion choices stood out from everyone else. Orange, today. Brightness Bethab had come representing her husband. The men in the army tended to disrespect him for letting her do so, but that ignored the fact that marrying Mishina for her political acumen had been a wise and calculated move. The five men of Bridge Four arrayed themselves behind Navani. They'd been surprised when she'd asked them to escort her. They didn't yet understand the authority they lent the throne. The Knights Radiant were the new power in the world, and politics swirled around them like eddies in a river. "Bright Lords and Bright Lady," Navani said, "I've come at your request and am at your service." Aladar cleared his throat, sitting.
"You know, Brightness, that we are the most loyal to your husband's cause."
"Or at the least," Sabariel added,
"we're the ones hoping to get rich by throwing in our lot with him."
"My husband appreciates the support," Navani said, "regardless of motive. You create a stronger Alethkar, and therefore a stronger world."
"What's left of either one," Sabariel noted.
"Navani," Bright Lady Bethab said. She was a mousy woman with a pinched face. "We appreciate that you've taken the initiative in this difficult time."
There was a glint to her orange eyes, as if she assumed Navani was enjoying her new power.
"But the High Prince's absence is not advantageous for morale. We know that Dalinar has returned to his distractions."
"The High Prince," Navani said, "is in mourning."
"The only thing he seems to be mourning," Sabariel said, "is the fact that people won't bring him bottles of wine fast enough for—"
"Damnation, Turinad!"
Navani snapped.
"That's enough!"
Sabariel blinked, then pocketed his cards.
"Sorry, Brightness."
"My husband," Navani said, "is still this world's best chance for survival. He will push through his pain. Until then, our duty is to keep the kingdom running." Hatham nodded, beads on his coat glistening.
"This is, of course, our goal. But Brightness, can you define what you mean by kingdom? You do know that Dalinar came to us and asked what we thought of this High King business."
That news wasn't commonly known yet. They'd planned an official announcement, and even had Elokar seal the papers before leaving. Yet Dalinar had delayed. She understood. He wanted to wait until Elokar and Adolin, who would become Kolin High Prince in Dalinar's place, returned. And yet, as more and more time passed, the questions began to grow more pressing. What had happened to them in Kolinar? Where were they? Strength. They would return. "The High King proclamation has not been made official," Navani said. "I think it's best to pretend you don't know about it for now. And whatever you do, don't mention it to ELA or Amaram."
"Very well," Aladar said. "But Brightness, we have other problems. Surely you've seen the reports. Hatham does an excellent job as High Prince of Works, but there isn't proper infrastructure. The tower has plumbing, but it keeps getting clogged, and the soulcasters work themselves to exhaustion dealing with the waste."
"We can't continue pretending the tower can accommodate this population," Brightness Bethab said. "Not without a very favorable supply deal from Aesir. Our emerald reserves, despite hunts on the Shattered Plains, are dwindling. Our water carts have to work non-stop."
"Equally important, Brightness," Hatham added, "we might be facing a severe labor shortage. We have soldiers or caravan men filling in hauling water or packing goods, but they don't like it. Menial carrying is beneath them."
"We're running low on lumber," Sabariel added. "I've tried to claim the forests back near the war camps, but we used to have parchment to cut them. I don't know if I can afford to pay men to do the work instead. But if we don't start something, Thanadol might try to seize them. He's building himself quite the kingdom in the war camps."
"This is not a time," Hatham said softly, "when we can afford weak leadership. It is not a time when a would-be king can spend his days locked in his rooms. I'm sorry. We are not in rebellion, but we are very concerned."
Navani drew in a breath. "Hold it together." Order was the very substance of rule. If things were organized, control could be asserted. She just had to give Dalinar time, even if deep down a part of her was angry. Angry that his pain so overshadowed her growing fear for Elokar and Adolin. Angry that he got to drink himself to oblivion, leaving her to pick up the pieces. But she had learned that nobody was strong all the time. Not even Dalinar Kolin. Love wasn't about being right or wrong, but about standing up and helping when your partner's back was bowed. He would likely do the same for her one day.
"Tell us honestly, Brightness," Sabariel said, leaning forward. "What does the Blackthorn want? Is this all secretly a way for him to dominate the world?"
"Storms. Even they worried about it. And why shouldn't they? It made so much sense." "My husband wants unity," Navani said firmly, "not dominion. You know as well as I do that we could have seized Thalen City. That would have led to selfishness and loss. There is no path through conquest to facing our enemy together." Aladar nodded slowly.
"I believe you, and I believe in him."
"But how do we survive?" Brightness Bethab said.
"This tower's gardens once grew food," Navani said. "We will figure out how it was done, and we will grow here again. The tower once flowed with water. The baths and lavatories prove that. We will delve into the secrets of their fabrials, and we will fix the plumbing problems. The tower is above the enemy's storm, supremely defensible and connected to the most important cities in the world. If there is a nation that can stand against the enemy, we will forge it here. With your help and my husband's leadership." They accepted that.
Bless the Almighty, they accepted it.
She made a mental note to burn a glyph word in thanks, then finally took a seat. Together they delved into the tower's most recent list of problems, talking through, as they'd done many times before, the dirty necessities of running a city. 3 hours later, she checked her arm fabrial, a mirror of the one Dalinar carried, with inset clock and newly designed pain rails. 3 hours and 12 minutes since the meeting had begun. Exhaustion Spren had collected to swirl around them all, and she called an end. They'd hashed out their immediate problems and would summon their various scribes to offer specific revisions. This would keep everyone going a little longer. And bless them, these four did want the Coalition to work. Aladar and Sabariel, for all their flaws, had followed Dalinar into the Dark of the Weeping and found damnation waiting there. Hatham and Bethab had been at the advent of the new storm and could see that Dalinar had been right. They didn't care that the Blackthorn was a heretic, or even whether he usurped the throne of Alethkar. They cared that he had a plan for dealing with the enemy, long term. After the meeting broke, Navani walked off down the strata-lined hallway, trailed by her bridgeman guards, two of whom carried sapphire lanterns.
"I do apologize," she noted to them, "for how boring that must have been."
"We like boring, Brightness,"
Leighton, their leader today, said. He was a stocky man with short, curly hair.
"Hey, Hobber, anyone try to kill you in there?"
The gap-toothed bridgeman grinned his reply.
"Does Huyo's breath count?"
"See, Brightness?" Leighton said. "New recruits might get bored by guard duty, but you'll never find a veteran complaining about a nice quiet afternoon full of not being stabbed."
"I can see the appeal," she said. "But surely it can't compare with soaring through the skies."
"That's true," Leighton said. "But we have to take turns, you know."
He meant using the honor blade to practice wind running.
"Cal has to return before we can do more than that."
To a man, they were absolutely certain he'd return and showed the world jovial faces, though she knew not everything was perfect with them. Teft, for example, had been hauled before Aladar's magistrates 2 days ago. Public intoxication on fire moss. Aladar had quietly requested her seal to free him. No, all was not well with them. But as Navani led them down toward the basement library rooms, a different issue gnawed at her. Bright Lady Bethab's implication that Navani was eager for the chance to take over, while Dalinar was indisposed. Navani was not a fool. She knew how it looked to others. She'd married one king. After he died, she'd immediately gone after the next most powerful man in Alethkar. But she couldn't have people believing she was the power behind the throne. Not only would it undermine Dalinar, but it would grow tedious for her. She had no problem being a wife or mother to monarchs, but to be one herself, storms, what a dark path that would lead them all down. She and the bridgeman passed no fewer than 6 squads of sentries on their way to the library rooms with the murals and, more importantly, the hidden gemstone records. Arriving, she idled in the doorway, impressed by the operation that Jasnah had organized down here since Navani had been forced to step back from the research. Each gemstone had been removed from its individual drawer, catalogued, and numbered. While one group listened and wrote, others sat at tables, busy translating. The room buzzed with a low hum of discussion and scratching reeds, concentration spren dotting the air like ripples in the sky. Jasnah strolled along the tables looking through pages of translations. As Navani entered, the bridgeman gathered around Renarin, who blushed, looking up from his own papers, which were covered in glyphs and numbers. He did look out of place in the room, the only man in uniform, rather than in the robes of an ardent or storm warden.
"Mother," Jasnah said, not looking up from her papers, "we need more translators. Do you have any other scribes versed in classical Alethalan?"
"I've lent you everyone I have. What is Renarin studying over there?"
"Hmm? Oh, he thinks there might be a pattern to which stones were stored in which drawers. He's been working on it all day."
"And?"
"Nothing, which is not surprising. He insists he can find a pattern if he looks hard enough.
Yasna lowered her pages and looked at her cousin, who was joking with the men of Bridge 4.
Storms, Navani thought. He truly looks happy.
Embarrassed as they ribbed him, but happy. She'd worried when he had first joined Bridge 4. He was the son of a high prince. Decorum and distance were appropriate when dealing with enlisted soldiers. But when, before this, had she last heard him laugh?
Maybe, Navani said, we should encourage him to take a break and go out with the bridgemen for the evening.
I'd rather keep him here, Yasna said, flipping through her pages. His powers need additional study.
Navani would talk to Renarin anyway and encourage him to go out more with the men. There was no arguing with Yasna, any more than there was arguing with a boulder. You just stepped to the side and went around.
The translation goes well? Navani asked. Other than the bottleneck on numbers of scribes?
We're lucky, Yasna said, that the gemstones were recorded so late in the life of the Radiance. They spoke a language we can translate. If it had been the Dawn Chant,
that's close to being cracked.
Yasna frowned at that. Navani had thought the prospect of translating the Dawn Chant and writings lost to the Shadow Days would have excited her. Instead, it seemed to trouble her.
Have you found anything more about the Tower's Fabrials in these gemstone records? Navani asked.
I'll be certain to prepare a report for you, Mother, with details of each and every Fabrial mentioned. So far, those references are few. Most are personal histories.
Damnation!
Mother, Yasna said, lowering her pages.
What? I wouldn't have thought you would object to a few strong words now.
It's not the language, but the dismissal, Yasna said. Histories.
Oh, right.
History is the key to human understanding.
Here we go.
We must learn from the past and apply that knowledge to our modern experience.
Lectured by my own daughter again.
The best indication of what human beings will do is not what they think, but what the record says similar groups have done in the past.
Of course, Brightness.
Yasna gave her a dry look, then set her papers aside. I'm sorry, Mother. I've been dealing with a lot of lesser ardents today. My didactic side might have inflated.
You have a didactic side? Dear, you hate teaching.
Which explains my mood, I should think.
A young scribe called for her from the other side of the room.
Yasna sighed, then went to answer the question. Yasna preferred to work alone, which was odd, considering how good she was at getting people to do what she wanted. Navani liked groups, but of course Navani wasn't a scholar. Oh, she knew how to pretend, but all she really did was nudge here and there, perhaps provide an idea. Others did all the real engineering. She poked through the papers Yasna had set aside. Perhaps her daughter had missed something in the translations. To her mind, the only scholarship of importance was stuffy, dusty writings of old philosophers. When it came to Fabrials, Yasna barely knew her pairings from her warnings.
What was this?
The glyphs were scrawled in white on the High Prince's wall, the paper read. We quickly ascertained the implement of writing to be a stone pried free near the window. This first sign was the roughest of them, the glyphs malformed. The reason for this later became apparent, as Prince Renarin was not versed in writing glyphs, save the numbers. The other pages were similar, talking about the strange numbers found around Dalinar's palace in the days leading up to the Everstorm. They'd been made by Renarin, whose Spren had given him warning that the enemy was preparing an assault. The poor boy, uncertain of his bond and frightened to speak out, had instead written the numbers where Dalinar would see them. It was a little odd, but in the face of everything else, it didn't really register. And, well, it was Renarin. Why had Jasnah collected all of these? "I have a description for you finally, Jasnah," another said. "We've convinced the Radiant that Lift found in Yedaw to visit Azimir. Though she has not yet arrived, you can find sketches of her Spren companion here. It looks like the shimmer you see on a wall when you shine light through a crystal." Troubled, Navani set the sheets down before Jasnah could return. She got a copy of the translated portions from the gemstones. Several young scribes were assigned to making these available. Then slipped out to go check on Dalinar.